Hi, my name is Mike, and I'm one of the ministers here at the church. I'd like to start by thanking you for listening to this sermon online. Before we get started, I'd just like to say that we truly hope that this audio recording will encourage you in your walk with God. But we also hope that it would just be supplemental to your relationship with Jesus, and that it would in no way replace the church that you should be plugged into or the spiritual leaders God has put in your life to shepherd you. So please, enjoy the next 30 minutes or so of this message. I pray it will challenge and uplift you wherever you are in your spiritual journey. God bless.
Well, now that was my sermon. He is risen. He is risen indeed. Okay, that's your line. He is risen. Amen. That's where we are in John's Gospel. Jesus is raised from the dead. That was our Easter message last week. And now we're in the final chapter of John's Gospel, John chapter 21, which contains the story we just sang about. It's interesting that as Mike has preached through the Gospel of John, that one of the texts that he has placed before us many times comes right at the tail end of John chapter 20. These words Mike had up on the screen many times. Jesus did many other miraculous signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book, but these are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. Mike has put this up before us many times because this is John's purpose statement. It says why he put in his gospel the things he did. There's lots of things he could have written about, but he chose these in order to produce faith in all those who read from his gospel. And it almost sounds like, well, that would be a good place you could just wrap up right there, John. It sounds like a closing statement, and yet there's a whole other chapter that comes after this. And that chapter wraps up with words fairly similar to those words that we find at the end of John chapter 20. At the end of John chapter 21, it says this: Jesus did many other things as well. If every one of them were written down, I suppose that even the whole world would not have room for the books that would be written. And so this tells us, both of those lines tell us that there was lots of material to pick from, but John took specific things that he wanted to share with us. And I think it would be a mistake for us to imagine that somehow John thought he was done when he got to the end of chapter 20, makes the statement, and then he thought, oh, look, I've got some more parchment here, I've got more ink, let's come up with a few more stories and wrap it up. I think we should understand John chapter 21 as an integral part of John's gospel, that there's something here for us to meditate on, something here for us to contemplate. So the burden of my song this morning is to bring that before you. So what's in John chapter 21? Well, John chapter 21 begins with this beautiful story, what John calls the third appearance of Jesus since he was raised from the dead. And it takes place at the Sea of Tiberias, which in John's world is the Sea of Galilee. And we have this, what we sang about, this: the disciples go out fishing, they fish all night, they catch nothing, and then there's this figure on the shore who calls out to them, how was the fishing? Catch anything? No. Well, cast your nets on the right side of the boat, and then it's like the whole lake wants in their nets. They head for shore, and we have this beautiful little encounter of the risen Jesus with his disciples on the shore having breakfast in Galilee. Beautiful story, which then immediately morphs into a very intimate and personal conversation that Jesus has with Peter. Three times Jesus asks him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And so they have this beautiful little exchange there. We're going to explore all of these texts in a few minutes. And then it ends up with Jesus saying something rather cryptic to Peter. He says, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and you went wherever you wanted to go. When you are old, you will stretch out your hands, someone else will dress you and take you where you do not want to go. And John's comment on that, his little parenthesis, is that he said this to say what kind of death by which Peter would glorify the Lord. So Peter's story is intricate to the tail end of John's gospel, and then it wraps up. What I want us to do is to try to invest John 21 with all of the kind of resonances that are set up for it. I believe that John fully intended this to be the closing of his gospel, but I think it's important for us to try to see these moments for all that they are. And it's interesting that at the end of John's gospel, when Peter hears that word from Jesus, he looks around and he sees the disciple whom Jesus loved. It's this mysterious figure who sometimes is the unnamed disciple, the other disciple, the disciple whom Jesus loved. But anyways, Peter looks at him and says, he understands that Jesus has spoken something concerning his future and how he will die. And he says, what about him? And when John speaks of this other disciple, he includes this little comment and says that this is the one that at the Last Supper leaned on Jesus' breast. And so we have in John 21, Peter, we have this unnamed disciple, this one whom Jesus loved, and we have this hook that goes back to John chapter 13. That's the scene when they are at the Last Supper. And so we're going to start in John chapter 13, and we're going to bring some thoughts forward and come back to John chapter 21. So if you have your Bible, you might want to flip back to John chapter 13. And John chapter 13, long chapter, begins with Jesus washing the disciples' feet. And then Jesus begins to speak about what's going to happen down the road. And it says in verse 21 of John chapter 13 that Jesus was troubled. And I want us to try to get a sense as we wander back into John's gospel a bit about what it was like for the disciples to experience Jesus and all of this. So he's washed their feet, and now he begins to be troubled in spirit, and he testifies, I tell you the truth, one of you is going to betray me. Now try that on. You've given your life to follow this Jesus, and he has you all gathered there, and one of you is going to betray me. That would set all sorts of things in motion in your soul. And his disciples stared at each other like we might, at a loss as to know what he meant. And then one of them, the disciple whom Jesus loved, was reclining next to Jesus. They ate laying down. Simon Peter motioned to this disciple and said, who's he talking about? And so we have this intimate scene. This intimate scene where Peter is wondering, what's going on here? Their world is being turned upside down. It's interesting that in John chapter 13 is the first time that this enigmatic figure appears in John's gospel, this one who is simply described as the disciple whom Jesus loved, first shows up in John chapter 13 right here. And it's interesting that Peter's story kind of gets rebooted right here in John's gospel. If you're reading along in the other Gospels, you'll discover that Peter is the center of many stories. But in John's Gospel, the last time we saw Peter was after Jesus fed the 5,000. Then he goes on to say, I'm the bread of life. And then he really throws the crowds for a loop and his disciples when he says, you must eat my bread and drink my blood. And John tells us that at this saying, people were confused and people began to leave. And Jesus says to the 12, are you leaving too? And Peter says, where are we going to go? You have the words of eternal life. And that's John's last story that concerns Peter until we get to John chapter 13. And these words that we just looked at were at the Last Supper. But just before this, Jesus, remember that scene where he takes off, he gets up from the table and he puts a towel around his waist and he goes to wash the disciples' feet. And it's Peter who says, you're not washing my feet. This is a time when there begins to be disorientation among the disciples. There was nothing in Peter's frame of reference that prepared him for this moment that Jesus might get up from the table and begin to wash his feet. Lord, you're never going to wash my feet. And then the scene where Jesus talks about somebody's going to betray me. And nobody knows who it is. And there's this sense of discord and heartbreak that's kind of traveling through the disciples as they seek to make sense of what's going on. Their world is being turned up down, and it seems like Jesus is turning their world upside down. He's dispelling with some things they've got in their minds about who he is and what this is all about. And so one of you is going to betray me. And so Peter says to this disciple whom Jesus loved, ask him who it is. And Jesus takes his bread and he dips it and he gives it to Judas, who goes out into the night. And that's kind of how that scene ends. And Peter says, and John at this point tells us that now Jesus says, now is time for the Son of Man to be glorified. And he speaks of going away. So things are going from bad to worse. We thought we understood who Jesus was. Evidently we're confused. Now he's talking about going away. And Peter says, where are you going? So this is down in John chapter 13, verse 36. Lord, where are you going? Jesus replied, where I'm going, you cannot follow now, but you will follow later. Peter asked, Lord, why can't I follow you now? I will lay down my life for you. And then Jesus answered, will you really lay down your life for me? I tell you the truth. Before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times. Try to get yourself in Peter's world. Try to understand what it was like to be Peter, following along after Jesus, giving your life to him. Then Jesus starts to do these things that make no sense to you, to disrupt your concept of who Jesus is. He wants to wash your feet. He speaks of being betrayed. And when you stand up to say, I will follow you, I will lay down my life for you, Jesus says, will you? Before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. The next time we encounter Peter, he's in the garden, swinging a sword. Jesus is being arrested, and Peter, true to his word, decides he's going to stand up for Jesus. He's going to lay down his life for him. So he picks up the sword and he takes a swipe at somebody, cuts his ear off. And Jesus says, put your sword away. It's another moment for Peter that's disruptive. Here he is. He's pledged to give his life for Jesus. And then when the moment comes, Jesus dismisses it all, tells him to put the sword away. And so Peter's world is being unraveled before our very eyes in John's Gospel. It's interesting that it's only in John's Gospel where the one who swings the sword in the garden is identified as Peter. I think John has a particular interest in giving us how Peter's story of faith here. So here's Peter. He has been told that before the cock crows, he will deny Jesus three times. The moment comes, the pressure's there, they're arresting Jesus. He stands up to defend him. Put your sword away, Peter. His world is coming undone. I don't know if your faith walk resonates with any of this or not, but sometimes, the circumstances of our lives bring things into our world that call everything into question. So I don't know if you've experienced those moments frequently or where you are, but sometimes we've got more questions than answers, and this is where Peter is. At this point, he's followed Jesus. He's made a commitment. He's pledged to stand firm to the end, and now his world is coming undone. And they arrest Jesus and haul him off. And Peter determines to follow for some reason. And so we wind up in John chapter 18, verse 15. Simon Peter and another disciple were following Jesus. Because this disciple was known to the high priest, he went with Jesus into the high priest's court. But Peter had to wait outside the door. The other disciple, who was known to the high priest, came back and spoke to the girl on duty and brought Peter in. So we're once again introduced to a scene where we have this other disciple and Peter. This other disciple will be specifically named by John, the author of the Gospel of John, as the same one as the disciple whom Jesus loved. So at the end of John's Gospel, we have this interaction between Peter and this one whom Jesus loved. And here, we're getting to the point of Peter's denial, this other disciple is brought into the scene. This does not happen in the Synoptic Gospels. In Matthew or Mark or Luke, there's no sense that there's another disciple there. But in John's Gospel, there is. It's this other disciple. He has inroads somehow. He goes in, and Peter is brought in because of him. And then these words spoken to Peter by the girl who brought him in. "You too are not one of his disciples, are you?" the girl at the door asked Peter. It's like as if Peter is being compared to this other disciple in John's Gospel. He's there. He doesn't seem to be unashamed to say who he is, a follower of Jesus. "You too aren't one of his disciples," the girl says to Peter, as if to say, "Like this fellow?" And Peter, at this moment, denies it. He hits rock bottom here, and he's going further down. "You too are not one of his disciples, are you?" the girl at the door asked Peter. He replied, "I am not." His world has come so completely unraveled. A few minutes ago, he was standing in the garden, swinging the sword, ready to die for Jesus. And here, his faith has hit rock bottom. And he stands and says, "I don't know him. I am not." And John tells us it was cold. And the servants and officials stood around a fire. They had to keep warm. And Peter also was standing with them, warming himself. So we're getting witness to Peter's darkest moment. And then John turns from that scene, the courtyard scene, and he turns the camera, so to speak, to the inside scene, where Jesus is standing before Annas, the high priest that year. And Jesus is facing accusations, and that John tells us these words. "Meanwhile, the high priest questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teaching. 'I've spoken openly to the world,' Jesus replied. 'I always taught in the synagogues or at the temple where all the Jews come together. I said nothing in secret. Why question me? Ask those who heard me. Surely they will know what I said.' When Jesus said this, one of the officers nearby struck him in the face. 'Is this the way you answer the high priest?' he demanded. 'If I said something wrong,' Jesus replied, 'testify as to what is wrong. But I spoke the truth. Why do you strike me?' Then Annas sent him, still bound, to Caiaphas, the high priest," says John. So the scene starts with Peter comes into the courtroom, the courtyard, and he is questioned, "Are you too one of his disciples?" And he flatly denies it. The scene switches to Jesus inside, testifying before Annas. And then the scene switches back once more outside. Only John does this. As Simon Peter stood warming himself, he was asked, same question as before, "You too are not one of his disciples, are you?" He denied it, saying, "I am not." One of the high priest's servants, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, challenged him, "Didn't I see you in the olive grove?" Again, Peter denied it. And at that moment, a rooster began to crow. You know, we who have been around church for a long time are familiar with this story. Sometimes it's hard to buy into it. That is, to actually take your soul there on this journey with Peter and get a bit of a glimpse as to what's going on here. This is Peter in his darkest moments. The unthinkable has just happened. A few minutes ago, he was swinging his sword in the garden. Before that, he said, "I will follow you wherever you go. I will lay down my life for you." And here now, while Jesus is in the spotlight, Peter is in the shadows, denying that he even knows him. I don't know where you are in your walk of faith today, or where you've been in your walk of faith today, but if you're anything like me, it's not all one steady uphill climb to glory. There are deep moments of trials, disorientation, And so I want us to try to get our hearts and our minds into Peter's world. So two things John does a little differently here. He has these two figures side by side, the unnamed disciple and Peter in this context. And the unnamed disciple comes out looking a lot better than Peter does here. And maybe more significantly than that is John sets it up so Jesus inside, giving testimony to before his accusers, stands boldly there in the daylight, so to speak, and Peter is in the shadows denying him. So it's a very intimate moment. And so I think it's key to understand, according to John's gospel, this little thing that's being set up between Jesus and the unnamed disciple. They're kind of juxtaposed here. In the next scene of the cross, Peter is nowhere to be found. Jesus has been crucified. We got a handful of women there, and guess who else is there at the cross? It's this disciple whom Jesus loved. He seems to stick with Jesus right to the end. But Peter falters. You know, sometimes when you're faltering, it's even harder to watch somebody else standing firm. And that's where Peter was, I think. What does Jesus say to us in the midst of all of our floundering around that we sometimes end up with in our faith, in the midst of our trials, in the midst of our struggles? Well, John answers that for us. There are two appearances of the risen Jesus to his disciples in John chapter 20. You're probably familiar with these accounts. It says, on the evening of that first day of the week, this is John 20, verse 19, when the disciples were together with the doors locked for fear of the Jews, let's not forget what's just happened here, their leader has been crucified, and now they're behind locked doors, huddled, frightened, and where's Jesus? Well, he don't let the locked doors keep him out. He enters into their world through the locked doors in ways we don't understand. And the first words out of his mouth are these beautiful words, "Peace be to you." Where is Jesus in the midst of our doubts and fears? Oh, he stands off somewhere shaking his finger at us, shaming us. No, not according to John. In the midst of their fears and the midst of their doubts, Jesus enters through their closed door and says, "Peace be with you." He wants to bring them to faith. He shows them his hands and his feet. In the next scene, because Thomas wasn't there, Thomas says, "Well, he can't believe their witness. Unless I touch his hands and put my hand in his side, I won't believe." And so it happens again. A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Can you believe that this is the posture Jesus would have with you? And your moments of doubt and fear and anxiety, that he would come and say, "Peace be to you," that he would show you himself? Well, this is what happens in John's gospel. And so those two scenes are the first two scenes of Jesus appearing after he was raised from the dead. Jesus and the catch of miraculous fish is the heading that I have for John chapter 21. This is the third time. And I think we should hear this story, this final one, in the same spirit. What's this all about? Notice that Jesus there, he kind of appears incognito somehow in John chapter 21. Peter says, "I'm going fishing," and six other disciples go with him. They fish all night. They catch nothing. Jesus says from the shore, "Children, you get any fish?" It's a beautiful scene. "Get any fish?" "No, no fish." "Cast your nets on the right side." And they cast the nets, and they're bursting with fish. And the disciple whom Jesus loved says to Peter, "It's the Lord." And Peter, who was stripped for work, gets his clothes back on, jumps in the lake, swims for shore. And this is beautiful scene there. Simple scene, beautiful scene. There's Jesus by the shore. He's got a fire going. He's got fish and bread on it. He says, bring some of the fish. Come have breakfast. This is the risen Jesus at work in the lives of the disciples, giving them just what they need on this moment. An intimate conversation, an intimate shoreside conversation with Jesus. And so I think that moment should be seen as another one of those peace be with you moments. And I think if you have an image of who Jesus is to you, when you face great trials and great doubts and great fears and anxiety in your life, I think we should put this image in there somewhere. Instead of a stern Jesus who stands at a distance, wagging his finger at you for your lack of faith, maybe envision a Jesus who comes into your broken space and says, peace be to you, showing you his hands and his feet and his side. Maybe you should envision Jesus inviting you to come. Come have breakfast. And they sit at the shore in this beautiful scene. And then immediately after that, we have this intimate conversation between Jesus and Peter. It seems like they've moved away from the other disciples. When they'd finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, remember Simon's story. Remember where he is. Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my lambs. What's Jesus asking Peter? I think it's likely when he says, do you love me more than these? He's asking him, do you love me more than the other disciples do? And when Peter says, yes, Lord, he's not saying, yes, I do love them more than the other disciples do. He's acknowledging that Jesus has touched his heart. Yes, Lord. You know that I love you. He has stood proud, waving his flag of loyalty, and he's found himself flat on his face in denial. And there's something beautiful that takes place here, right as John's gospel closes. Jesus has the very conversation with Peter that Peter needs to have. This same Jesus who showed up with the woman at the well, and with Nicodemus, who goes right for the heart of the matter, is speaking directly to Peter where Peter needs to hear it. It's a difficult conversation, but Peter's up for it. Do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Feed my lamb, says Jesus. Again, Jesus said to him, he's relentless. Simon, son of John, do you love me? He answered, yes, Lord. You know that I love you. Take care of my sheep, says Jesus. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? Why was he hurt? Because he denied him three times. And the third time was the worst of it all because that's when the cock crows. And so here Jesus is giving Peter this beautiful opportunity. It's a raw moment. But it's this beautiful opportunity for Peter to come forward and to confess who he is, to confess his loyalty to Jesus. And notice that Jesus here isn't shaming Peter. He's not wagging his finger at him. He's not giving him a demotion. He's calling this glorious confession out of Peter. This is exactly what Peter needs. Do you love me? He says, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. And so Peter's denial is overthrown by this confession. And Jesus invites him into this space. You know, oftentimes this is what we need. We don't just process things from a distance. We need to encounter them up and personal. And Jesus, thank you, Jesus, enters into our lives on these kinds of levels and addresses us directly with the things that are troubling us. But notice his posture. He doesn't demand a confession out of Peter. He doesn't shame him for his behavior. He invites him to reaffirm his love for him. And I think, perhaps most glorious of all, but I'm not sure Peter understood it at the moment, Jesus goes on from there and says, I tell you the truth, When you were younger, Peter, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted, but when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Jesus said this, John tells us, to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. And he said to him, "Follow me." Remember, Peter, "I will lay down my life for you." He wanted to lay down his life for Jesus. And he ends up denying him instead. And then Peter says, "You're going to lay down your life for me." But Peter turns, and there's that other disciple again. This one whom Jesus loved. And Peter says, "What about him?" He understood that Jesus was saying something about how his life would end, but what about him? And Jesus says, "Never mind about him. What about you? You follow me." And that's basically where John's gospel ends. You know, there's always some other disciple who seems to have an inroad with Jesus, who gets it right when we get it wrong. But Jesus calls us intimately, you, follow me. And so let us remember who this Jesus is that is front and center in John's gospel, the heart he has for us in the midst of our fears, in the midst of our doubts, in the midst of our anxieties, this Jesus who appears behind locked doors, this Jesus who shows up in familiar territory at the Sea of Galilee. He asks his disciples to eat with him, and he asks these pointed questions to Peter so that Peter has opportunity to open his heart to him. Maybe you can be that person to your brother or sister in some way. Maybe you can express the same generosity of Jesus. And maybe as you seek to come face to face with Jesus, you can be bold enough to have that conversation that Jesus longs to have with you. May God bless you, and may you find hope and peace and joy in our resurrected Lord. God bless you.